54. The Dogs of Hrava. A dirge for Hrava, city of long winters. Sailors lament the rocks in your treacherous bay, the kind-killing eels in your brackish lake. Bad poets rhyme about your lepers dying in saffron robes on Bald Island, so named because they cut all the wood for fires, or because they shave the lepers' heads, the poets won't agree. Here's a health to your memory, Hrava, ringed with mountains half around, your tower of two colors leaning after the earthquake 30 years gone. Proud Hrava, with your king's palace of timber called the Hall of Shields because your warriors were your strongest walls, or so you bragged, but then they fell. Pilgrims from the Gunnish Islands farther north that spawned your strong blonde heirs came to leave their father's finger bones in the ossuaries of your temple of Tur. And there stood stony Tur in statue form, as if guarding the temple door with his golden mustache and wooden tree-tall spear, his beaten copper helm gone green, and the spiral tattoo on his stone chest inlaid gold. Tur, slayer of giants, 50 feet tall on a 10-foot pedestal of volcanic rock. I even remember a song about you, westernmost capital of Manreach.
Hrava hath a summer sweet, 40 days on Lamlin's feet, a fall so bitter, bare and cold, you swear the gloamin's taken hold. When the winter icefall brings, for firewood you'll sell your rings. So when the spring at last returns, you've nothing left to eat nor burn. Hrava, Hrava, stone and wood, little else to do man good. Save for iron, flesh and bone, Hrava, Hrava, wood and stone.
When the giants had come to Hrava this year, they'd found a proud, rich city just starting to go soft in the middle, like an old warrior now too fond of beer and bench, a once-feared sword hanging up with its first cobwebs on it. They'd found a beautiful city cut with canals and tall new houses with slate roofs and gardens of strange winter plants. That was not what I found on this 10th day of Vintners, a week and a day later than my guild told me to get here. I found a graveyard of rubble and thrown boulders. I found a playground of 3 thieves. I found so much blood between cobblestones that 30 rains might not wash it all away. I would soon find the statue of the giant-killing god toppled and lying on his face in 3 huge pieces, the gold and copper stripped off him like jewelry off a victim. The city of Hrava had been well and truly murdered. The rest of the party stayed in the foothills close to the dead city while I went in to see what I could find out. Galve entrusted me with the map of Hrava Rough Fucker had provided. It was the first time I'd had a good look at it. She just handed me the map and nodded at the ruins. Turned her back before I could say anything. Not that there was anything to say. I was a thief, and thieves scout as well as steal, don't they? I hadn't Nargle's power or the Aspanthian's swords, but I had luck and training. This was my moment. And if I could find that wayward witch queen, it might just win me enough to have my own leaning house on a windy, galtish bluff, with no one to answer to but me, and not to do but read old stories and count my filthy silver. Besides, I wanted to impress not only Nargle, but that Spanth birder too. It struck me funny that I should care so much what Galva thought, but so I did. I don't know if it was the noble birth or the Aspanthian blood, but the last daughter of Braga had a way of making you feel like you were just one stupidly brave deed away from finally earning her respect. Maybe walking into a city that had been crushed by giants was more stupid than brave, but there was nothing for it but to point my toes and swing my legs. I walked by the cold, calm lake with my strung bow around me and 12 arrows in my quiver, my long dagger oiled and my feet up on the boughs, ready to move. The sun was on the water like coins, which made me think of my own Plath of Glouris or Shining River back home. Water looks more or less the same everywhere, or everywhere I've been. Poets enough had spilled ink about the green shallows and the sea of tigers, or the turquoise bays off Istria and Beltia, and maybe oceans were another class, but it seemed to me that a river was a river and a lake was a lake. This one was just really far north and really far west. What the fuck was I doing here anyway? Oh, that's right. Betraying my guild for love of a woman, friendship with a spanth, and hatred of the takers. Onward! Soon, I heard the chunks and haws of a tongue I'd never heard before, and I hid myself quick. Crouching low, I saw one party of looters, squat, dusty brown-haired, hard boys and sharp girls, draped in finery and bristling with spears and hatchets, pulling a cart laden with spoils. They were on the road, and I was well away from it, caping to the high grass already yellowing with the start of Vintner's month. I squatted like a mother quail and waited for the larcenous bunch to pass. I didn't feel like trying to fight or flee the six of them to keep them from adding my few possessions to their trove. I had to wonder how long they'd be able to keep it. Larger, tougher groups of looters and highwaymen prowled the roads around the broken capital. Unless they were allied with one of these, their merrymaking would be brief. I passed what had once been a sort of town square, its proud, tall, blue firs mostly snapped and fallen, dozens of kind-sized boulders strewn about, mixed in with the rubble of a fountain that once honoured Avery, the gunnish goddess of rain. Her beautiful white arm, I think now not unlike Nargal's when first I saw it at the Downward Tower, seemed to beckon to me since she'd found no help from Voltan, the Sky Father that arm had once lifted toward. I found a canal stained with blood on both sides, pocked where great rocks or massive axe heads had smashed cobblestones. The fallen city wall behind it told me that a second stand had been made here at the canal, that it was probably just too wide for a giant to leap. It was too wide for a normal kin to leap, or even me without a cantrip behind me. One street advertising glovers and tanners had fared better than the rest in that most of the buildings were still standing, but their insides had been gutted. It looked like each window and door had coughed or vomited rubble into the street. At first I saw people only at a distance, shadowy figures in two or threes who were as eager to avoid me as I was to avoid them, though I would need to talk to someone before long if I were going to be able to find this non-guild thief Urmehen that rough fucker said might help us. Stray dogs started following me near the wrecked Temple of Tur. At first it was just one or two, then another half dozen joined and they stalked nearer. This is all I need, I said. I readied my bow. I really didn't want to shoot a dog. I walked through the trash in the street until I came to the three pieces of the fallen statue of Tur, the rather less than successful deity charged with keeping giants in line. The dogs, skinny and sick and desperate, started to ring around me, the leader edging forward with his head down, his lieutenant stalking close behind. If I shot him, they'd probably scamper, but I thought I'd see what good dodging them might do. I used Tur's stone belt and scabbard as footholds and scurried up to stand on the top of Tur's arse, which I now saw had been defaced by men as well as giants. A vandal of some artistic talent had used pitch or black paint to draw a number of phalluses all in a circle, pointing where the humbled god's bunger would be. Fair play, too. He'd had only one job, hadn't he? People putting their father's finger bones in a great stone chest to pray for protection from giants had a right to be disappointed when an army of giants wrecked their capital. The giants had done their share, too. Someone must have led on to the biggins what Tur's line of work was, because a coil of poo only a giant could have manufactured adorned poor Tur's helmetless head. When and if I got down from here, I was going to have to find something to write with and add Tur'd with an arrow pointing at the offended matter. The thought made me chuckle. The lead dog paced back and forth in frustration at finding me out of reach and huffed two low barks. I barked back at him. I don't know what I said, but it might have involved his mother because he began to growl. Ah, don't take it hard, I said, leaping the 6 feet or so between Tur's arse and his back and shoulders. I'm sure your sisters have fleas up their squinnies too. He barked again. I barked back. This conversation might have continued until well after dark had not the children arrived. From one of the shadowy side streets that spilled into this square like the spokes of a wheel, I heard a whistle. The dogs looked up. Now a small mob of children came, somewhat less skinny and desperate than the dogs, and they started yelling and pelting the dogs with rubble from the street. The little bastards could throw, too. Soon, the dogs, after a few half-hearted lunges at the new pack, decided to find better odds and trotted in a dignified retreat down one of the other spokes of the street wheel. The scene was so amusing I momentarily forgot I was more than just a spectator. What I should have done was sprint down one of the other streets before I got myself surrounded, but by the time I thought that, they were too close. They came up to where I perched and held their hands up to me, saying the gunnish words for money and food. I showed them a copper shave and they said, yeah, yeah. So I threw a half dozen coins down at them, but the kids who got those just hid them away and kept saying, Igeldi, Esnuk. I thought about threatening them with an arrow, but I would have felt nearly as bad about shooting a child as I would have about shooting a dog. Also, the thought of the score or so of them raining busted brickwork at me was manifestly unpromising. Inspiration came to me and I shouted, Urmehen, which stopped them. I turned it into a question. Urmehen? I said, and pointed down different streets. They started speaking to each other. A ginger with a black eye and a wicked short spear seemed to be in charge. He said, something, 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 Urmehen, which I assumed to be, what do you want with Urmehen? Or, what will you give me if I bring you to Urmehen? So I held up a silver owlet and said, yea, which sounded enough like a Norhalter's yea, that I assumed it must mean yes. The leader started climbing up toward me, but I don't know what would have happened when he got there, because a horn sounded. A really big, nut-shrinking horn that rattled my teeth in my head. The smaller children ran, but the ginger's close henchman stayed near him, and though he now climbed no farther, he held his hand out insistently. The horn sounded again, and I felt it in my sternum. Something big was moving down one street, making big steps. The ginger and I both looked wide-eyed into the darkness of that street, and he looked my way again and shoved his empty palm at me. He was just that little bit more greedy than scared, which I understood completely. His lads clutched at his sleeves, but he wasn't going anywhere until I paid him the toll for safely exiting the square. Ballsy little sprumlet, anyway. I threw him the owlet. He took it and ran, behind the others. When the horn sounded again, I thought about shooting him through the thigh and scooping up the coin when he dropped it. I was pretty sure his boys wouldn't turn about to help him with a giant almost here, if one of them even noticed he'd dropped off, but I didn't shoot. I almost liked him. I was glad for my generosity later, mostly. Now, though, I got down and ducked behind Tur's arse, watching to see what was coming from the alley. The streets leading to Tur's Temple Square, brilliantly called Temple Square, if the signs were to be believed, were merchants' alleys, their crowded buildings leaning in so the apartments over shops nearly kissed windows over the streets they plumbed in shadow. Down a street called Martyr's Way, I saw one dusty shadow, 15 feet high of an inch, duck to avoid the bottom of a balcony. He wasn't the first one to enter the square. First came Kind, 6 of them. Their necks collared, breaking into sunlight so it shone on their pale northern skin. Next, the giant's fist holding the ropes attached to the collars, steering them as a hunter's hand might guide a pack of leashed hounds. Next, the giant himself. It was the first one I had seen in real life, not counting the blurry images in the witness coin. Fothanan put a jape on my lips, I mouthed, feeling panic rise up in me. Two more giants walked behind the first, one holding a horn that came off some beast whose dimensions defied belief. A hillux, as I believed, native to the giant lands past the thralls. The giants wore greaves made from bones and leather to protect their shins, and kneeling skirts hung with strips of bronze. Great leather girdles, 2 inches thick and likewise tiled with bone, rose almost to their teats, arching in the centre to shield the breadbasket. They wore no shorts or mail coats. The leader's pierced teats hung with bronze rings like door knockers on rich houses, and staring eyes tattooed over those teats. Fuzzy, blued tattoos covered their muscly arms, and their hair hung in matted locks. I would later learn this marked them as a lower caste, that the upper sorts had hillock's bone combs, and these before me weren't allowed to touch combs. Terrified though I was, enough of my reason remained to note that these giant folk had armoured themselves where the weapons of kind could easily reach. I couldn't imagine trying to drive a spear or sword through those greaves or past that girdle. I would later see the great wicker shields they used against arrows, shields woven by human slaves, but this lot weren't arrayed for battle. They were out for sport. Worse, they were drunk. How like dogs they healed their leashed kind. Of course, this was how they looted. They were too large to go into the buildings that still stood, so these they sent inside to find gold or silver or other kind. Hell, I'd done it again. I'd stared too long. I broke and ran. The giant saw and barked a hoarse syllable after me. It sounded like, "Go!" But I spoke no giant, or thought I didn't. He let two of the kin slip their leash. A very drunk giant with a horn blew it again, and the other laughed. I got to an alley, then turned with my bow. The running men saw me drawn on them, but ran at me with half-closed eyes anyway, scared of what I would do to them, more scared of what was behind them. I shot the first one, in the groin, and he fell, tripping up the second. The giants loosed two more to chase me, yelling now to rattle teeth, I suppose in anger that I had slain one of their trained pets. The alley I'd chosen was, I now realized, the same the children had taken. Had that only been a moment before, it felt like half a day. It was too narrow for the giants, too littered for kin to easily run down. I ducked and hopped and slid, holding my bow with one hand, a ready arrow in my fingers. The fresh kinned hounds had made the alley. They were fast, picked no doubt for running. One yelled at me, and I thought he said stop in Galtish, but that was scarcely likely. I said, "Sorry about this, mate," and shot him through the eye. I came out onto a street whose buildings had mostly collapsed, offering not as much cover as I'd have liked. I saw a sort of crack in the street, then saw it close. The sewers! I ran for that, stopping to stab the kind hound that tried to tackle me. I did it sneaky, hiding Paltry in front of me so he couldn't see, then sort of slipping hard left, driving the blade down and right just at gut level. It's a very popular guild move, one of the first things they teach you at low school, because it works. He grunted with the knife stuck in him. He balled himself around the knife and slid to a stop on his side, no longer concerned with me or his giant masters, one of whom was stomping drunkenly around the corner, slobberingly blowing his hillock's horn. Bollocks if I was going into the sewers of a strange city without that dagger. I poked him in the eye with my thumb, and when he moved his bloody hands to defend his face, I ripped Paltra free from him and sheathed her wet. "Yeah, I know, I'm a bastard. Let's see how nice you are with your best knife hilt deep in a fucker and three giants and their slaves coming to kill you." I grabbed the iron ring and heaved the stone sewer lid, only just strong enough to move it. The giant was less than 40 yards away now, the kind slave closer. I dropped into the hole, holding up my bow, not knowing how far I was falling or onto what. Only 10 feet or so, as it turned I hit dry, foul-smelling stone, a sort of landing with steps below I could only just make out. I took the first 10 steps, then hit another landing. I looked up at the rectangle of sky above me and saw three slaveys look down and point. They only did that an instant before they were yanked brutally away, and a huge head and shoulders blacked out the sun near completely. I looked back down and couldn't see where the next step started, so I shot an arrow where the sun used to be and heard a giant yawp. The rectangle of sunlight magically reappeared. I hurried down the steps just as the dead hound man was hurled at me, one of his legs clipping my shoulder, almost knocking me off my feet, but I'm nimble, thank Fafanin. My descent into hell was unimpeded.